You know, when we think about the basic human right to housing, we usually picture bricks and mortar and land. We rarely picture, like, dictionaries.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into a really fascinating document from 2015. It's the proposed language policy from South Africa's National Department of Human Settlements.
And their whole mission is, to house the nation.
Exactly. But how do you deliver a basic human right when your citizens speak 11 official languages and, well, your budget is super tight?
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is that this document is a direct response to a 2012 law. That law basically required government departments to figure out how they actually speak to their people.
Right, so it's not just some theoretical exercise.
No, not at all. We are looking at the literal mechanics of government compromise here because, you have 11 languages, but you can't realistically translate every single building permit or form into all of them.
It's basically administrative triage, so they have to make some really tough calls to make it work.
They did. So for internal day-to-day operations, they just defaulted to English.
Okay, but what about talking to the actual public?
Right. Well, for external communication, they chose two indigenous languages to accompany English. Those are Izulu and Sipedi.
And there's a very strategic reason for those two, right?
Oh, absolutely. So Izulu belongs to the Nguni language family, and Sipedi belongs to the Sotho family.
Oh, I see. So by picking one from each major linguistic group, the government maximizes its geographic and cultural reach.
Exactly. They get the widest reach without having to, pay for 11 different translations of everything.
That makes logical sense, but I mean, it still feels like a massive compromise.
Yeah.
You are essentially sacrificing absolute equality for functional multilingualism.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But wait, doesn't the South African Constitution explicitly mandate that the government elevate indigenous languages? If the internal gears of the department are still turning in English, is that just the cost of doing business, or is it a step backward?
Well, you've hit on the core friction running through this entire policy because the Constitution's Section 6.2 absolutely demands that elevation.
Right, it's written right in there.
But the department explicitly cites the stark realities of expense and practicality. Financial constraints literally dictate the language they use.
Which, creates a huge blind spot. If they are pouring all their resources into just English, isiZulu, and Sepedi, what happens to someone who only speaks Xitsonga?
Or someone who relies on South African Sign Language, yeah.
Exactly. What happens to them?
So they have built in some fallback mechanisms for mass local public programs like Izimbizos.
Those are the traditional community gatherings, right?
Right. So for those, they adapt and just use the dominant language of that specific province.
Okay, that helps the group. But what about individual needs?
Well, if you need an interpreter for an unlisted language, you have to submit a formal written request.
Wait, submit a written request to get help reading written documents.
Yeah, no, it's heavily ironic.
Setting that irony aside, the policy says they then have 20 working days to provide a translator. I mean, that's nearly a month.
It is a really long time, especially when you consider the stakes.
Right. If you're dealing with an urgent eviction dispute or trying to reach the ombud service that handles neighborhood conflicts, waiting a month just to be understood seems like an impossible barrier.
It really does. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it shows how bureaucratic process can completely choke urgent human needs.
For sure.
But the policy tries to offset this with a complaints mechanism.
Yeah.
So if you feel your language rights were denied, you can lodge a grievance.
Okay, but how much time does that eat up?
A lot. You have 3 months to write to the director general,
Okay.
and then they have up to 3 months to respond.
Wow.
And if you're still unhappy, you get a 1 month window to appeal to the minister.
Don't tell me.
Yep. The minister gets another 3 months to decide.
So if my math is right, you're
Yeah.
waiting up to 10 months just to resolve a language complaint.
Yeah, up to 10 months.
At that point, the bureaucracy is essentially using time as a shield. I mean, the friction itself becomes a deterrent. No one is going to fight that.
It is a massive timeline, and it underscores why those initial three language choices are so consequential.
Because if you aren't in that top three, you're stuck.
Exactly. It is literally the difference between getting immediate help or entering a 10-month administrative labyrinth.
So, bringing this all together, what does this actually mean for you listening? Whether you are navigating corporate red tape at your job or trying to get answers from local government, this deep dive shows how policies are the literal bridges or barriers between a human right like housing and actual human access.
Yeah, and it really raises an important question we just have to impartially report on here.
Go ahead.
If a government's language policy is explicitly dictated by financial constraints, at what point does a limited budget inadvertently silence the most marginalized citizens?
Leaving them waiting for access to a system they have a constitutional right to, simply because they can't afford the time it takes to be heard. It's definitely something for you to mull over next time you interact with any local government office that claims to be universally accessible, but maybe only operates in one or two languages behind the scenes.